Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a program dedicated to empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. I'm so glad you're joining me today for another in-depth conversation. I certainly would like to invite everyone who's new to the show to visit my website, What Women Must Know, opt in there, because not only do I send the archives of all the radio shows to you, but I have some special articles and reports that I send out, and also my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, is a great resource for all sorts of wonderful information that I keep finding and posting, and just offering you the opportunity to get as many perspectives on things for your health and well-being. So go like me over there at What Women Must Know and opt into my website, which is also What Women Must Know. So today I'm out of my office, so it sounds a little different in my recording. Bear with me, but I wanted to be able to have the show today and bring you my very special guest, and we're going to be exploring some fascinating topics about, we're exploring consciousness with a renowned filmmaker. Let me introduce him to you. It's Michael Wiese, and he is the world's top publisher of over 240 books on consciousness and filmmaking, including The Writer's Journey, Save the Cat, Cinematic Storytelling, The Shaman and Ayahuasca, and The God Molecule. His company's mission, which is DivineArtsMedia.com, is to publish books that empower the filmmaker, healing both maker and audience. Michael authored the recent book, Onward, and, Onward and Upward, an award-winning memoir, which discusses his encounters with Salvador Dali, Buckminster Fuller, Shirley MacLaine, Wild Dolphins, Don Jose Campos, and the Sonoran Desert Toad, and his sacred journey films made in Tibet, Bali, and Peru, and his battle with Parkinson's, which he is winning, thank God. So we have a fantastic conversation in store, and it's my great pleasure to welcome Michael, who's calling us all the way from the UK. So, Michael, hello and welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you for joining me and being able to share some of your amazing adventures and experiences with my audience, my worldwide audience. As we discussed before we went on air, this is a topic that just fascinates me so much because for a long, long time in my life, I have been drawn to other states of consciousness. You know, the spiritual journey allows us to open our eyes to more of what's going on and to expand our awareness to the greater reality. And I know people who've been listening to me are aware that I have been making some trips down to Peru and Costa Rica and exploring the journeys with the very powerful spiritual healing plant medicine, ayahuasca, and, just kind of opening to other ways to heal and reconnect with who we are. So that's what I wanted to start with, because you had sent me your wonderful book and your the movie you made called The Shaman and Ayahuasca. So maybe we can start there. I know there's lots of things we can talk about, Michael, but this is a jumping off point. So let's talk about what that journey was about, why you made that film, which was so fascinating, and some of the perhaps insights and learnings and healings that occurred on that journey to Peru for you.
Okay, that's a boatload.
I'm sure it is.
Well, I got interested in ayahuasca because of the Parkinson's disease, which I was diagnosed with about 10 years ago. And in my research, I learned that ayahuasca was used for Parkinson's in the 1920s. And as it turns out, it's not the brew. You know, ayahuasca is a combination, or it's generally the brew of the vine and a leaf. Parkinson's was being treated with just the vine, so it didn't have the hallucinogenic or vision-creating effect. But I didn't know that you know, until much later, until after I had participated in ceremonies. So, you know, I learned about it, and I've been trying lots of different things, cell replacement therapies, and just a myriad of other things. In fact, if by the way, if you, my voice is a little weak now, you know, Parkinson's people go on and go off. And when you're off, you're kind of frozen, you shake a lot, and I'm doing a lot of that now, so it's harder for me to communicate this and have my thoughts in order. But maybe I'll come back on in the middle of the program and you can see the before and after effect.
We'll just take you as you come.
Yeah, thank you. Well, that's the only way you're going to get me, so.
Good.
A friend of mine, I was making a film in Tibet, and he had been working with a shaman from Peru, and he was trying to get me to come to Peru with him to experience a shaman. And I was doing a lot of Buddhist practices and was not mixing any, you know, psychedelic drugs, so to speak, you know, in my practice. I checked with my various teachers, and they all said, well, what's in your heart? My heart said, well, check out ayahuasca. So we went down to Peru, my wife and I, and met Don Jose Campos, who's just an extraordinary man. We felt a kinship with him the minute we met him, and a trust. And then we embarked on probably the hardest thing that I've ever had to do, and certainly the most valuable thing, which was drink that god-awful black tar and hold on for dear life. Because what it did, it didn't heal me in the way I expected. You know, I kind of expected the tremors would go away and other symptoms of Parkinson's, which some of them have. And I attribute that only in a general sense to ayahuasca. But ayahuasca did something much more profound, which was, you know, reinitialize my hard drive and dump my operating system and give me a whole new way to look at reality and realize that the reality I believed in before was built on beliefs and not experience. And ayahuasca, as you know, is when they say teacher, they really mean teacher. You know, she will communicate with you in ways that you cannot fail but understand the teaching. And for me, you know, a plant, first off, one of the first things she teaches is that we're all connected. And, you know, historically, I mean, plants go back four plus billion years. So they have a little more experience on the planet than we do. And it's ironic that a plant teacher has stepped forward to, you know, teach us ecology. I mean, the big lesson was in ecology, that we're all part of everything else. And that after 6 years, I guess, was how long ago I did ayahuasca, that's with me all the time, every day. And when I go out into the garden, I have this communication with the plants and the natural things in a way that I had not, you know, before. I mean, every day I go out, I see some miracle happening, some sacred geometry in the plants, and it's just a whole new way of being. You also discover there are multiple dimensions that we live in, even though we're not conscious of them. Ayahuasca shows you the different, many different dimensions. You can think of it as you being a radio receiver and receiving, you know, hundreds, thousands, millions, an infinite number of channels or worlds or dimensions. And you can go in and participate with entities in these different dimensions for knowledge. And you'll find teachers, but you'll also find tricksters. I mean, it's a carnivalesque world. And ayahuasca uses a whole variety of modalities to teach you. And I mean, I realized I was being taught telepathically, where if I ask a question, by the way, with ayahuasca, you can ask questions and get answers. With some of the other psychedelics, it doesn't quite work that way. So that's a very profound medicine. I mean, it's light years ahead of the other things I'd experimented with. Anyway, it's such a big experience. It's very hard to very difficult to talk about. And also, you realize that the experience you have of it is not, you can't express it because we don't have words for it, because few people have had the experience of it. So you really do a disservice in a way to the teaching by talking about it, but it's so profound, that's all you want to do is talk about it.
Mm.
And, I mean, I made some films to try to explain a little bit about that world, knowing that I was trying to film the invisible, the impossible. And because most what people see about it, they go on YouTube and they look at ayahuasca ceremonies and they see somebody who shot footage with one of these night cameras, you know, these sniper scopes where you can see in the dark. And you see a bunch of people being sick and throwing up and making horrible sounds. That's not what ayahuasca is all about. That's kind of the outer layer. As you peel the onion, that's the first layer. And there can be a lot of purging, but that's insignificant in terms of what you get back. So it's a purification ceremony and practice as well. So, you know, it's not for everybody at all. I think the more committed you are to a spiritual path and you have spiritual questions, the more likely you are to get, a life-changing experience. If you're doing it for recreational purposes or because it's cool now, you're going to get knocked over the head with a 2x4, you know, if you go in with any arrogance. I found that, you know, I was more grateful after each session. And the way you go in is with enormous respect and openness and willing to work, and then you can have a great experience. But I mean, I get a lot of visions. Not everybody does. I think about 20% of the people that take ayahuasca have visions. Ayahuasca tends to communicate in its own, in whatever modality you are most comfortable with. So I would get telepathic instructions or teachings. I would get voices. It would either be my own voice or another voice. Or I would get images and narratives. It was thick with images. And I was surprised that other people didn't get so many images. My wife gets a lot of images, too, and narratives. But the visuals are more vivid and more believable than waking reality. So you look around your room now or wherever you are in your car, ayahuasca is more vibrant and is sharper and stranger and than you know, what we're used to. And often you will get overlays of different dimensions. So you can be aware of the normal dimension, and you can be aware of other dimensions interacting. It's almost like there's a thin membrane between realities, and you can travel. I think the more accomplished people that have used ayahuasca more and have a handle on it are able to navigate fairly well. My wife is able to go and visit people who've passed over, and these could be people that or people before. I mean, you learn that there is no death, I guess, is what I'm saying. I saw some people that I knew that had died and was able to, you know, talk with them and engage with them. And then I found that there was no dying. I would die, but I would die over and over and over and over again until I got the message that there is no death. There's consciousness that goes on beyond death, which was definitely a reconstructive kind of experience for me. Not that I'm, you know, don't have some fears about death, but not at all like I probably did before. So imagine what that does to the way you live in the world if you know you can't die or won't die. So it's just remarkable. I never thought at this age that I would experience something that would be so profoundly life-changing. But when we came back to it,
Go ahead. Go ahead. I'll ask. I'll go
ahead.
I'm
kind of rambling on. Just telling you whatever is coming.
Okay. I was going to ask you. You know, I'm curious. Why do you think there is like an emergence of this medicine in the world today? There's so much interest in ayahuasca, and it's, you know, a fascinating trend that's happening, if you want to call it a trend. But there's a greater purpose, I believe, that it's that she's emerging, she being the spirit of ayahuasca is emerging into the world. I'd wonder what your thoughts are about that.
Well, I just think it's about time. I mean, this has been around for, you know, tens of thousands of years. It's the Western world and the Northern world has been slow on the uptake. You know, they've always considered shamans to be schizophrenic or something. They had a very negative connotation about it, so people stayed away from those people and those kind of experiences. So it's been going on an awful long time. And I think, you know, it's maybe not only that we're becoming more open to it, but it's that the shamans are becoming more open about getting the message across to us. You know, there's a and ayahuasca has an agenda. It feels very clear when you are under the influence of ayahuasca. She wants to teach you about the plant world, and she wants to heal you, and she wants to take care of you so that you'll take care of her. Because we're all in this together, you know. We're living in this whole environment. It's, you know, without all this incredible, complex interaction, there'd be no life. So she gives us a course, in a PhD course in ecology. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, absolutely necessary for us to find our relationship with the earth and the planets and the, just where we are. But it's kind of miraculous that we can see out into the heavens and millions of miles, light years away, and see it at a micro and macro level, the, you know, the tiny little life. I found a spider net, tiny little spider nets about the size of my fingernail this morning. And there's a whole little world going on down there. And all these creatures are and plants can communicate. Don Jose says if you vibrate at their vibration, you can communicate with them. And that's very true if you slow down enough. So thank goodness for Parkinson's, because it has slowed me down a lot. And with it come rewards, you know, of mindfulness and sightfulness. And I always moved at a very fast pace, and now I'm not able to. But there are other treasures that it reveals. So I often say that if it was Parkinson's, if I had to choose between ayahuasca and Parkinson's, in other words, if I had to keep Parkinson's but was exposed to ayahuasca, I would do just that. If I had to do it all over again. Because it's my attempt at healing that's brought me into all of this. So it's also requires a lot of reframing your emotions and your thoughts and the stories you tell yourself in order to heal. You know,
Michael, I'm sorry, I got disconnected. I'm back.
Oh, you missed the best part. I gave out the bingo numbers and the winning lottery numbers. Too late.
Oh, gosh. It's okay, I'm back. Doing that in my well-organized office is so different than when I'm on the road. But anyway, good. I'm glad you're still there, and everyone else listening is still there, so I'm sure everyone's very patient with me today. So did I just interrupt you? I'm sorry.
I was just rambling on.
Okay.
Is your show to call in? Call in?
No, everyone just gets to take in all this great wisdom and knowledge. I saw a very interesting little video clip on what happens in the brain when people are working with this plant medicine. And basically what it was demonstrating was that the brain, under the power of this medicine, actually is able to, you know, the connections in the brain that determine our perceptions of reality actually get rewired. They get reconnected. It's like in the process of this journey, the brain literally can rewire and create different perceptions of reality. And therefore, we can see the world in new ways. We can heal the traumas. We can heal post-traumatic stress. We can heal brain damage. We can heal the birth traumas we've come in with, all the emotional the perceptions that lead to emotional stress. And that to me was so profound to realize that we have a medicine that can truly allow us to have a new perception and a more harmonious, aligned perception of greater truth than where we were before.
Well, as you describe it, it felt like that on the first in the first ceremony. I actually felt my body being sliced and diced and reorganized, and felt like there was a group of, I didn't see them, but I felt them, a group of doctors in a big hurry to heal me, and they were rewiring my brain and reprogramming me, and I could feel it, I could see it. I was in sort of a dentist-like environment, a very high-tech environment. If I didn't, some people would describe it maybe as an alien abduction kind of scenario or story, and it certainly had qualities of that. And I just had to keep breathing and keep saying, "Well, this is the healing. You can just ride it out." And ayahuasca would you could ask questions, and ayahuasca would answer questions, and sometimes she'd say, "Okay, now it's time for the healing," and the healing usually meant kind of a rocky, for me anyway, a rocky road. Sometimes it was really loving. Ayahuasca is like a mother that you always wanted to have, that is, aware of you every second and looks after you. And she would call me my son, my boy, just with the greatest of love. And then she'd say, "It's time for your healing. Are you ready?" And I'd say, I'd buckle up and I'd say, "Okay, let's do it." And then that scanning would start and the buzzing and the shaman is singing these Ikaras along with move an enormous amount of energy and spiritual force in the environment. So he conducts the experience in a way and is aware of all the people and what they're going through, and both as a group and as individuals. So it's a very, unheard of in the North, although it's been going on, Native Americans and Northern Mexico and so on, other plant teachers, but where do you live? Do you live in Oklahoma?
I live in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
And there's an ayahuasca movement in Oklahoma?
No. Well, there are people who are interested in ayahuasca. There are people from Tulsa who have come with me on these journeys to Peru and to Costa Rica. To have an experience of ayahuasca, I kind of ties in with what you were just saying, Michael. And for people who are listening and may think we're a little crazy or whatever, but these are very sacred ceremonies, and they're done in a ritualistic form under the guidance and supervision of a traditionally trained shaman, and should be done under the auspices of a traditionally trained shaman who facilitate, and not just facilitate, but they take the medicine too, and they are in there with everyone else's unique experience that's going on.
I should warn people that don't just get on an airplane and go to Iquitos and hope to hook up with some shaman. Get some recommendations. There are a lot of neo shamans out there and a lot of unscrupulous people in this in the ayahuasca world. And had I not met Don Jose Campos, I don't know that I would have done it. And you're trusting somebody with your life, really.
Yes.
And so proceed with caution. It's not for everybody. Do a lot of research. The Shaman in Ayahuasca is the book that we created with Don Jose. It gives his story of his life and how he works with the medicine. And it's a very simple book, but it's very deep and very powerful. And so I would say study up as much as you can, and it will be nothing, your experience will be nothing like what you studied, because it's you can't talk about what happens because it's so big.
You can't figure this stuff out. You just have to be willing to surrender into the experience and trust that the healing that you need will come in the way that is most appropriate for you, however that may look.
Surrender is the underline that word, because that's what you'll be working with. Strange things will happen, and you have feelings, and you'll be purging, and you say, I can't believe I signed up for this, and you just have to trust and keep surrendering. And probably the mistake I made the first time I did it was I didn't surrender 100%. I surrendered 99.9%, but that's not enough. I was holding out to just a little bit of energy, which I thought I would need if I was going to survive. And I had to ultimately give that up.
So if I may ask, so the outcome of those journeys for you gave you a new connection with the natural world, with life?
Absolutely.
And what about your physical challenge with Parkinson's?
Well, it goes on. It's like a constellation of moving symptoms, and some days I have them and some days I don't, and some days I'm on top of it and other days I'm not, and it's up to me, and it's like a 24-hour engagement. And that's been quite a course too. But you can use these experiences for learning, or you can say, oh, poor me. And the same poor me is not surrendering to the whole process and the beauty of life and the, you know, you got to trust life and whatever is served up. And be grateful. Gratitude is the other thing I learned from Don Jose and from ayahuasca. You know, we have a lot to be grateful for. After the first ceremony, I threw myself on the ground and just, you know, couldn't get low enough to the ground. And there was a Brazilian shaman that was working with Don Jose, and he was wonderfully helpful, as are everybody in the circle. And he was Japanese, and so I bowed down to him. And, you know, Japanese, you bow lower and lower and lower to show your respect. And we bowed to each other until our noses were in the dirt, and we still weren't lying deep enough. It's very funny.
And I think we should say, for people who don't know what a shaman is, I think that's, you know, something we need to explain to people about these, like these carriers of the ancient wisdom that they've trained for, right?
Yeah, Don Jose doesn't call himself a shaman, even though we call him a shaman in the book. He says, you can call me a shaman if you want, but he's really a curandero, which just means healer. And that's probably a more appropriate way to think of him, because there's less baggage attached to curandero than there is to shaman. You know, if you look at... He's trained with...
I notice these days, I was just going to say, I notice these days a lot of people are giving themselves the title as shaman.
Yeah, I think
it's... isn't necessarily deserved.
Well, Don Jose says, you know, I could impress you by wearing feathers and a costume, but he's just, he's a humble guy, and he doesn't take credit for anything, any breakthroughs that people have, any great, you know, he's facilitating all this, but his ego isn't, you know, claiming it. So he doesn't puff up when you congratulate him or thank him even. It just rolls off him. Whereas some of the neo-shamans, you know, they're rock star. They're rock star shamans. And I'd say beware. Just like any spiritual teacher, you know. As one teacher of mine said to me, if you don't understand your teacher, get a new teacher.
Mm.
It's good to shop around.
So Michael, I know you're living in the UK. You've had such an amazing career in what you've done with your films and your writing. Well, what are you doing now with the time that you have?
I'm dealing with Parkinson's, and I'm running two publishing imprints, Divine Arts and Michael Wiese Productions, which is a film book line. And we've got about 15 or 20 books in production, and we go to different conferences and show our books. We just got back from a big one in Greenwich outside of London. And I don't know. We just continue to plod on with our projects. But, you know, one thing I wanted to bring up was that I wanted to say earlier, which is, there are a lot of plants. There are like something like 353 psychoactive plants. So ayahuasca isn't the only one that gives you visions, but it's certainly one of the, if not the most powerful one. But we took, you know, a lot of people in our ceremony were afraid of going to the jungle. It was the first time for, you know, all these Westerners to go to the Amazon. And so everybody was a little bit nervous about being bitten by something or eaten by something or scratched by something or inhaled something, you know. So we took this kind of like a tea called Bobinsana, which is a plant that grows next to the river stream. That's very gentle, you know, flowing water, and has that, that's kind of the essence of the tea. It's not hallucinogenic, but it relaxes you and it allows you to not be afraid of the jungle. So you drink this for a couple of days before your ayahuasca journeys and ceremonies start, and you see all these things in the jungle. It could be harmful, you know, snakes or bugs or whatever, but you're not foolish about it. You're able to look, see into the jungle and all its treasures and not be afraid. So that was, and it also softens the, ayahuasca has very intense colors, and this softens those colors and gave me, anyway, more childlike imagery, like I was in some Disney World landscape, you know, more attuned to a nursery than anything I can think of in terms of its imagery. So there's, you know, we're just at the very tip of this exploration. So maybe that's a good thing for a lot of people to be in to it, because we need to learn about this, how to work with it.
And I gather there's so much research going on right now, not just with ayahuasca, and we're talking about in laboratories, you know, or talking about, you know, medical facilities, but also other psychoactive plants like psilocybin. There's a lot of research that's going on into the power of psilocybin to heal and to heal brain injuries or post-traumatic stress or, you know, again, unresolved, you know, wounds that we carry that have disconnected us from our true self, which is all, to me, very exciting that we can return to the power of these plants that have been used for thousands of years, and we've been, in our culture, been, well, they've been denied to us, actually. They've been made illegal.
Well, you know, it makes you, the experience with ayahuasca, some of these other plants, makes you realize you're bigger than you thought you were. You're more capable, more insightful, leading a richer life than you ever imagined. I mean, a hundredfold, a thousandfold, a billionfold. And you say, wow, I got it really wrong about humans. They're really incredible creatures, and I am too. And I don't think we don't hold ourselves that way. And what a different world it would be if we did. I mean, I was at one point in the ceremony, I was crowned Prince of Ayahuasca, you know, by Mother Ayahuasca, and I kind of laughed, and I said, how about, can you make that king? And she said, no. You're not there, no.
Did you knew you were making a film when you went down there, I would assume.
Yeah, well, we were making a book when we went down there, and I happened to have my camera, and Don Jose gave us permission to film whatever we wanted. And then I went another time where I went on a dieta, which is basically being in isolation for 2 weeks in the jungle and taking ayahuasca in a ceremony every other day, every other night. And I made a video diary of that experience to give people an idea of what it's like. And I mean, it's preposterous to think you're going to really give somebody an experience of what ayahuasca is like. It's like you've never seen it or never will again. It's like, you know,
it's impossible to communicate any really deep, profound experience. And you can talk about it all you want, but you have to experience. You have to have experience. You know, I guess I'm drawn to the medicine at this point in my life because it just seems to me that the most important thing on my journey at this point is to open myself to a greater, greater connection of my the spiritual dimension that I am. So I am able to fulfill the greater purpose of my life, you know, and do the healings and open to a greater truth, so I can navigate through my life. And I love the journeys I've had with a mother ayahuasca. Some of them have been, I mean, really taken me out of my body and, out of the physical realm and brought me to a realm of light where I wasn't a physical body. And that's when I have this direct experience that there really isn't any death. I dropped the bag of water. It was my physical, but I emerged as a life being and went to this other place, which was, so profound. And I know you talk a lot about, and the teachers in your film, The Shaman Ayahuasca, talk about ayahuasca helping people to heal the fear of death, which is still, I think about this, Michael, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years, people have been being born and dying, and we still are so terrified of this event that happens to all creatures, all life, right? And we still don't understand it, and we still don't embrace it, or generally speaking, some cultures, I guess, have done a really good job with that, but not our culture. And it's still a terror for most of us facing that stage of our journey here.
Flat out surrender and trust. Just trust. Just surrender and trust and get that fear out of the way, because it's inhibiting virtually everything you do and keep you small. Maybe that's easier said than done, but the whole thing is just so immaculately well that how could death not be as profound and magnificent and miraculous as everything else. So I'm kind of looking forward to it, to my non-death.
Yes. Yes. Even I think that word, maybe we need to find another word.
We need a new vocabulary for it, because we did some books on death and dying, and they did very poorly. They're very profound books, and very important books, but it's such a scary word for people.
Yes.
Just use the euphemism, yes. Passing over. Well, I don't know if you pass over, you go somewhere. So I think it needs to be.
I've been using the term transitioning. Do you like that one? Do you think that's appropriate?
That's good.
Yeah, I do think we need some new words, a different vocabulary, because we can, if we can language things differently, we can perceive differently.
Yeah, one thing I found was the language is completely inappropriate for what I was experiencing. And the more I tried to just use language that people would understand, the more interested they were in probably sending me to a lockdown, a lockup place, because you get so excited about what you're learning, and you just lose people because there's no common experience. And maybe you could say, well, I went to Niagara Falls and it was spectacular, and they get some idea of what you're talking about because they've seen aerial shots of Niagara Falls. But this is bigger than Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
And so you naturally get excited about it. When we were first here, I think we were just talked to everybody about it, and now we're much more selective, because you get that kind of glazed over look. And either you're open or you're not. And, a lot of the people at conferences we're going to are very open to it. And I'd say about half the people that attend are between the ages of 25 and 35, and they're looking into it now for the first time. So there's a whole uprising of younger people that are interested in this, and not for recreational purposes either. There's a whole spiritual base to it. And that's really exciting to see.
So I have a question. I wanted to ask you, what was the impetus that initiated starting this Divine Arts Publishing Company, publishing all these books on consciousness, spirituality? What was it that moved you in this direction in life?
Well, I've always been interested in all things spiritual and different Asian, Eastern religions and so on. And I'd published a kind of a book or two. I'd sneak them into the film books, like The Writer's Journey, or, you know, they had more of a spiritual basis to them. But what really happened was, and it'll sound bizarre and be another thing they wouldn't lock us up for, but my wife woke me up and said, I just got a message from ayahuasca that we should start an imprint about all the things we're learning. What do you think? And I said, sounds good to me. And I went back to sleep. And so the message we got from ayahuasca that we should do this, and that ayahuasca would help us and support us if we did this. And so we said, okay. So we did it. We're still, you know, getting our way.
Well, I would imagine if you get a message right from Mother Ayahuasca, you don't have much choice in the matter, really.
Yeah, you listen. You listen good, too.
Yeah. You know, there's so much more going on in this reality than people are normally aware of. And I guess I'm really pulled to have this journey for myself and to invite other people who are drawn to come along, because we're at a stage in our human evolution where it's imperative that we wake up to who we are. And as you were saying, wake up to the fact that we are all connected, and that there is no death, and that there's a, you know, greater purpose for why we are here, and to be able to get on with it. You know, get on with it. I have to tell you an experience that one of the women who came with me in her ayahuasca journey, she felt like her head was opening up and all this knowledge of the universe was being poured in. And she just, you know, was receptive and not knowing exactly what was going on, but that was her experience, that this knowledge was being poured into her head, you know, and into her brain and into her being. And when she returned, she is she's creating a school, a bodywork school, a very unique school, and an institute. And she said, since she returned, all this knowledge has been coming to her about how, you know, in her work, you know, in her work with her institute, and the work that she's teaching, and being able to convey really profound insights to her students ever since she had that ayahuasca journey. So that to me was just so, you know, just so moving to know that through that experience of that ayahuasca journey, it had such an impact on the work that she's doing in the world.
I think many people find that. You know, doors opened up for us, and we became very productive, and everything changed. I mean, when we drove down our driveway coming home, the trees and the plants and the flowers, they were throwing leaves and flowers and welcoming us, sort of like a Rose Bowl parade. They were saying, you got it. You got us. Welcome home.
Oh, my God. Really? Really?
It's been like that ever since. In fact, I'm looking out the window now at the plants, and they're absolutely thrilled that we're talking about this. They like it.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
You've seen Pablo Amoringo's work. Pablo Amoringo's paintings.
The ones in your documentary.
Well, there's just a few are shown there, but he's got an enormous body of work, and you know he shows a lot of the different dimensions, and I would say the paintings aren't fantasy paintings; they're documentaries. He's depicting
right.
what he sees. And what narratives come out, and all these amazing creatures. I mean, any creature you can imagine, you end up seeing in ayahuasca. In fact, you can ask them if they're your teacher or not. There are a lot of tricksters along the way, so they may not answer you, or they may say you're... Anyway, I mean, all of this enormous knowledges and experiences are available to you. And it's just endless.
I was absolutely mesmerized by his paintings. that I saw in your documentary, The Shaman and Ayahuasca, and I do encourage people listening to get a copy of that documentary called The Shaman and Ayahuasca. And it's a beautiful, gentle documentary about your journey and spending time with these wise elders and the artists who made these visionary paintings. It was so profound, especially as he explained the greater meaning of the journeys that he was documenting in his paintings.
People can see this, both films, for free as a stream. Go to our website, divineartsmedia.com, and look under films or downloads, and you can watch them for free, or you can download it for a couple dollars, I guess. And, it'll give you just a taste.
Wonderful. So let's just repeat the website. So it's divineartsmedia.com.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. So that's wonderful. So if you people listening go to divineartsmedia.com, you can watch the documentary, The Shaman and Ayahuasca. You know, whether you have any interest at all, you know, it doesn't matter. That movie is just so moving, and the lessons and the teachings are so profound, it will, you know, speak to everyone. So I just encourage everyone to watch it or get a copy and share it with your friends. It's quite extraordinary. There's so much more going on in this world than most people understand or experience. And I think we owe it to ourselves to just, you know, expand our horizons as much as possible, because answers are always found outside of what is known. You know, when I was a psychotherapist, I would always use that metaphor. It's like it's what you don't know that you don't know where you find answers. It's not what you know. You have to go to that place where you don't know what you don't know. So we have to be open to make leaps into the unknown to discover great, great gifts, great healing, great transformation for ourselves. Yep.
You mentioned Jim Fadiman, who's a dear friend of mine, and you said you had him on your show. He gave me a line once. I don't know where he got it or whether he wrote it, but it's kind of a little affirmation that you can use. You can say, you know, I want to be open to the universe, and I don't have to. Or, I don't want to do the dishes, and I don't have to. You can use it for anything. But what it does, it shows you that you have a choice. But in that moment where you want to play in the universe or you don't have to, you're choosing. And either way is a powerful position, because most of the time we don't know. We're not conscious. We're making choices.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I found it very powerful.
Yes, it's true. I'm just thinking about that now. I'm mulling that over. It's true.
I can become more conscious and I don't have to. I can become more aware and I don't have to. I can be afraid of death and I don't have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I'm so grateful to our conversation, because I trust that people listen to us, they'll, you know, reflect more about what the greater purpose is for their lives. And I just so believe that we're here to fulfill a purpose, and if people aren't experiencing that they are doing that, and they need to really make a commitment to the journey so they can find the purpose. Because, you know, you and I were at a stage of our life where people are, you know, retiring, talking about retiring or are retired. You know, it's the whole retirement construct of our culture. But when you think about it, people retire because the work they've been doing, for the most part, is not their soul's work. So they're so happy when they can kind of stop it and do, you know, whatever or nothing. But if you really love what you do and you're passionate about what you're doing, then you never want to stop. You always want to continue learning, healing, transforming, or doing whatever you do. And you should be doing what you love to do as long as you're taking your breath.
Hmm. But sometimes I think people worry too much about the purpose of their life. The purpose is to earn a lot of money or have a house, big house, or a big family, or, you know, whatever it is. It's always kind of out of our grasp. It's, you know, we're like always reaching, striving for something. When really we've already done the work. We're already unique, incredible human beings with our own perception of how the world works, like nobody else, like you're an original. You've already won. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to win the Oscar. You know, you don't have to rent a suite in Trump's Towers. You know, you've already done it. We don't have to go to the jungle. We can choose right now to be open to knowing that we've already fulfilled our purpose. And the rest is just a nice ride. So, I mean, I see that in my daughter and her friends, and younger people who so much want to, you know, succeed, and you know, they define success in very different ways. But all of it is kind of set out there, set at a distance, you know, like a carrot on a stick. Well, we are the carrot, we are the stick, we are ourselves. We're like Mars rovers, I think they're called rovers, you know, where they explore the surface of Mars and bring home samples. But that's what we're doing. We're having our own unique experiences, and that's all being captured, as you know, in ayahuasca. You can visit anybody's consciousness, or go anywhere, or meet anybody, living or dead, or in history or in the future, and it's all accessible. That's a mind blower too.
Yeah. Well, that hasn't been my experience. Which I look forward to maybe journeying in those places. And you know, every time I do this medicine, it just offers me just more peace in my life, you know, more peace.
I found that ayahuasca would transform into things I was comfortable with. So, like, I like books and libraries, and so at one point I would meet her in what became known as the big room. The big room is like shelves of books and jungle, and it's all growing kind of like Angkor Wat. And I realized at one point this was ayahuasca taking the form of a building that I really thought was cool. And that's where the teachings would take place. Mm. I never saw her. I just saw the room because there's nothing to see, or everything there is to see.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to the big room.
Well, you know, this has been such a wonderful conversation, Michael. I so appreciate the time, and you know, you sound great. You came across really great, and I know that it can be challenging with Parkinson's. Can I just ask you what's this, before we kind of wrap this up? But what have you found most helpful in your healing journey with Parkinson's?
Not buying into Parkinson's agenda. Trying to eliminate Parkinson's itinerary whenever I can. And see, there are like two trains going. One is me, Michael, and then there's Parkinson's. So I can tell when Parkinson's starts to inhabit me, if you will, with a symptom. And then there are lots of little tricks to get rid of it. A lot of it is a mind game about creating scenarios for yourself that turn into reality. And so, you know, I work with a guy in Israel who helped me a lot through a dance therapy kind of program, which I won't go into now because it's take too long. But where was I going with that? Well, I just think the way you frame it has a lot to do with its persistence.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like surrender again. Don't fight it. Move with it. Like I was just shaking when I was talking to you about that. I wanted to stop, so I started moving my hand. Now I'm in this sort of a Tai Chi kind of move with my hand. Both hands are aware, and they're not shaking. Now my legs are shaking. So I'll go to the part of my body that's calm, and I'll just transfer the calmness to someplace else. That's one trick. I'm working on a book about all of this. I don't know whether I'll be able to get it.
Well, I look forward to that book coming out, because so many people who are diagnosed with this condition are seeking help and guidance through it. So I'm sure it will be a welcomed book to that process. So good luck with the writing, and hope it's out soon, Michael.
Well, I hope so, too. What I was going to say, I just remembered. I just forgot again. Oh, it's I define myself as a healthy person with Parkinson's. So that's important,
yeah.
How we hold the notion. I am a healthy person, and I have Parkinson's, but Parkinson's doesn't define me.
Yes.
I don't care if people know whether I have Parkinson's or not. In the beginning, I did, and I tried to hide it, and it made things worse. So it's just, you know, sometimes I shake, big deal. And I started doing seminars again, which I didn't do for 6 years because I didn't want to, you know, my voice wasn't strong, I didn't have the stamina and so on. I gave myself all these good reasons why I shouldn't be doing seminars, which I'd done for 20 years, you know, longer, 20 years or longer. So how we frame things is very, very important, and how we hold ourselves in that frame.
Yes. Yes. It's everything, actually. Wow. So we've come to the end of our time on the show. It's been a absolutely wonderful, delightful conversation, so inspiring. And I want to thank you, Michael, for being with us and sharing your wisdom. And it's so good to know you're out there teaching and writing and sharing all the wisdom that you have with the world.
Thank you. All the merit goes to you for having your radio podcast, whatever you call it.
Thanks. Yep, that's what we call it. And I'd love to have you back sometime in the future, especially when that new book comes out. That would be fantastic. And meanwhile, I do want to have everyone go and visit divineartsmedia.com, download Michael's wonderful documentary, The Shaman and Ayahuasca. Just be curious to learn. It's a wonderful...
I wanted to say one last...
Go ahead.
I just had a birthday. I turned 70. And I decided not to get any presents. I would give presents to everybody else. So I'm giving away my Onward and Upward book. And people can go to the website and you can download the book as a PDF file. And happy birthday.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful. Well, happy birthday. And may you continue to get younger and healthier.